Welcome to Parallel Lines. We're not going to number this little episode. And the best comparison we could think of was, you know, when they add an additional platform at a station, Tony, and it doesn't go in the order of the numbered platforms because they've kind of wedged it in afterwards. So like platform zero.
Yes. You know. They can't just suddenly add another platform number at the end because it throws all the system out. We've got an episode that goes in between two. So we're going to have to call it episode zero because it's the only way it fits in with the number system. So this is episode zero and it's a little bit different.
It is. So this was just us taking advantage of having access to wonderful guests and asking them just a few more questions that we didn't cover in the main session that we had with them. So enjoy.
This is just an extra little bit because we've got two female engineering type people with us. And we were talking the other week about women in rail and understanding opportunities for everybody within the rail industry. And as we've got some female railway top people with us, I think it's a good chance to just chat to them how they got into the industry, how they got interested in this world, and to encourage those of you out there that this could be for you as well. It's not anymore an industry for blokes with oily hands. And, you know, looking at some of the pictures that are coming up for the Rail 200 thing and looking back to even 50 years ago, you see pictures of an industry that was just blokes. And that has changed hugely anyway. But as we've got the two of you here, let's just go through a bit again about, you better introduce yourselves just very briefly, what your sort of job is. But then we'll just talk about how you got into this and how people have reacted when you say, I work in the railways and stuff. So just run through who you are again.
I'm Stacey Thundercliffe. I'm an engineer that's worked in train operators for the last almost 20 years. Working for various train operators across the UK, including Trans-Pennine Cross Country and most recently at Avanti West Coast. I did mechanical engineering at university.
So you're a proper engineer, Stacey, as they say, and I often find myself explaining that I'm not a proper engineer, but I appreciate engineers, but I'm an operator, and we have another one of those here. Rachel, introduce yourself.
My name's Rachel Stretton. I'm head of fleet delivery at Trans-Pennine Express, so also not a proper engineer, but I am an operator by profession. I've been on the railway for 17 years now, and I've done loads of different jobs and found myself managing three fleets of trains at the minute.
So, Rachel, you work around a lot of engineers, as have I over the years. What got you into the railway?
I'm going to keep it really real because, I mean...
We love real on parallel lines.
I'm going to keep it really real. I left university at 21, I graduated. I was going to go back and do my PhD in reproductive and developmental biology.
Wow, that's not very railway,
so
is it?
It's really not, no. And so I'm not very... Yeah, it's a bit weird. But I got place in Imperial College in London to do that, but I didn't have any money to move to London. I'm from Liverpool.
London?
London?
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
For those listening, we need to leave that in because while we were just warming up, we were talking about soap operas and how if you're in Coronation Street, you go to London, and if you're in London. EastEnders, you move to Manchester. You know, but you're going to London. So you went to London.
I was going to go to London, but I didn't have any money. And obviously, you need money to live in London. And so
lots of it.
Which I didn't have at the time when I was 21. So I saw a job at Merseyrail working at Liverpool Central Station, and I thought, oh, this will do for now, that's looks interesting. And my friend went, oh, you should go for that because you always know when what time the train is. I was like, great, yeah, I'll do that. So I started off as station staff at Liverpool Central. I was there for 2 years. I got a management job looking after the kind of back office side of the retail. That involved contract management with some of the retail systems providers and some of the suppliers. I moved, did a sort of sideways move to performance, to ops performance, where I was a performance analyst and finding out why things were late. And I really loved that. That was a fantastic job. When the Merseyrail new trains came about, I was part of a team that mobilised a new contract for maintenance with Stadler. And then I decided to leave Tocqueville behind for a couple of years. I went to the ORR, where I did the economic regulation of network rail on the op side of things. So I was an operations specialist for ORR. I was a brilliant job, Anna Jane. Yeah. It was fantastic. They've got a real good team there who get involved in all sorts of things from land disposals and that land that network rail is looking to get rid of, and track access applications and depot access applications, and just generally being the performance and ops voice of reason for the regulator. Brilliant job, fantastic team. But I wanted to come back to Tocqueville, and I've been at Trans-Pennine Express for 3.5 years now doing fleet things. So yeah, work with a lot of engineers, but I'm not an engineer myself.
And I would say your CV, if you will, Rachel, and knowing you, is what all over the place. To me is no, is that you like to understand how things work and why things have gone wrong. You're a problem solver by nature. Like, that's clear to me from working with you. You like to know why stuff's not working properly and you want to fix it.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
That's absolutely fair. And so in my current role, I get to exercise a lot of that. I get to exercise a lot of relationship building as well. Yeah. And so although a lot of the maintenance that we do to our fleets in the UK these days is commonly outsourced to expert organisations like Siemens or Hitachi or any number of international experts in rolling stock, it's all covered by contract, but it's relationships, isn't it? It's making sure that the train gets back to the depot, that you do what needs to happen, and that we put it out for customers in the morning. So yeah, that's my focus in my role. It's my probably strength built up during my career. So I don't need to be an engineer to understand one end of a, I mean, I do know one end of a train from another. That'd be pretty
it's
tricky.
It's a good start, though, isn't it?
It really helps, but I don't know the ins and outs of the system, but there are lots of very clever people, like my colleague Stacey, who know how that sort of thing works, and we work together seamlessly with the engineers and the production people and the operators.
So you're the more traditional engineer, if you like, Stacey. So what does that look like, and what has that looked like for you in your career?
People often ask me how I got into engineering. I get asked it a lot, being a female. And when I think back, you know, there wasn't one day I just woke up and thought, I know what I want to be. I want to be an engineer. But there was a couple of things kind of as I was growing up that probably influenced me. One, which was I'm quite a practical person, and I always wanted to, things only interested me at school if I understood how it would apply in the real world.
Ah.
So, you know, while I was at college, you know, I was just naturally fairly good at like maths and physics, which is what I did. And people were trying to encourage me to do like maths at university and things like that. But there were certainly, even at college level, at A level, there were things that I was being taught in maths that I was like, I don't see the point in this. When would I ever use this in a real life situation? And that really frustrated me and demotivated me really to kind of want to learn more about it. So when I kind of looked around at what kind of university courses I could do, that's where engineering kind of came in, because I thought, well, that's kind of involves the stuff that I'm good at, but it always applies it to a real life situation, which is what interests me. So there was that part of it. And then also when I look back, my dad worked in the chemical industry. He wasn't, he did like an apprenticeship, but he didn't go to university and do engineering, but he did an apprenticeship. He used to work for a company, ICI.
Mm-hmm.
And they did an initiative, and I'm not sure whether it was ICI's initiative or whether it was more of a nationwide thing, of Take Your Daughters to Work Day. Mm-hmm. And so there was a few years where I went to work with my dad and got exposed to that kind of environment. And again, I didn't sit there and think, I'm going to do this when I'm older. But I think that just educated me in that kind of work, which just kind of, I suppose, opened my brain up to thinking that that could be something that I do. That kind of thing when I was older. And then in terms of how I kind of fell into the railway, it wasn't something that I planned. You know, I didn't grow up thinking I wanted to work with trains or anything like that. But when I was coming to the end of university, I started applying for lots of different graduate programmes, including, you know, all over from railway to United Utilities to Tesco to, I'm trying to think who else I applied for. There was a lot. Mm. And I was offered two roles. One with BAA, which looked after Gatwick Airport, and it was being down there as a graduate and looking after all their, you know, luggage handling and lifts and escalators, and I think they've got like a monorail thing down there, or with First Group at TransPennine Express. And I lived in Warrington, I suppose similar to Rachel, taking the one in Manchester meant I didn't need to move. I didn't need to move down to London.
London.
And so I took that one, and it was the same salary for both. So it made sense for me just to stay local. And I never looked back, really. Stayed in the railway ever since. Say, always in train operators up until now to make the leap into something a bit different. But worked my way through the kind of engineering function from project engineer to fleet engineer, into contracts as well, so doing a bit of fleet contract work, and then being at TransPennine as their head of engineering, and then most recently at Avanti West Coast as their head of fleet and engineering, and looking after a team and lots of big value contracts, which has been really good. Lots of new trains on the way as well. I've did joke after the one at Avanti that I've done my bit now for me, trains. I don't want to do any more for a while. You know, it's quite difficult, but rewarding at the same time.
And how have you seen it change over 20 years? I think this question applies to both of you, but I think in my, I've been on the same sort of amount of time as you, Rachel, about 17, 18 years now, and I don't feel like it's changed that much for me. I feel like there's women around, there's a few senior women who I look up to, but not that many, you know, there's still not that many more. I see a lot younger women come through the bottom end, I think, maybe, but I'm probably not that close to it, so you're probably closer than I am to it. Stacey, what do you think's changed?
I think I am seeing more and more females coming in, and I think I was reading an article about International Women in Engineering Day, saying I think it was around between 16 and 17% now of female engineers. That's not just railway, but that's across engineers the piece, generally. Yeah. Whereas probably 8 years ago, it was only at 9%. So,
okay, so
we're going in the right direction. Increase, obviously, yeah. Still a long way to go, mm-hmm. But going in the right direction. And certainly in my last two roles at Avanti and before that at TransPennine, there was a marked difference in seeing more of a gender balance in the teams there. Now, they were kind of more office-based teams. I think shop floor type engineers are very much predominantly male, mm-hmm. and it's difficult. You know, that's still a difficult area. And I think females are more encouraged to go into that area if they can see other females there.
Yeah.
And so it's difficult to kind of get started. And on the shop floor, there still isn't, there's not many females, but it's getting better. And certainly more modern depots and even older ones that have been upgraded are now more, I suppose, what I say, female friendly. Like there are female toilets, for instance.
There is somewhere. Which sounds ridiculous, but there wasn't.
But there wasn't.
No, and at Birkenhead North, I remember being you know, terribly embarrassed by having to ask for the key for the toilet.
Yeah, because we've all been there asking for the key for the ladies' rooms.
And I think that's definitely something, role modelling is a huge thing, isn't it? And I think as there's been more women in senior positions, like you say, Anna Jane, I think earlier in my career, there weren't so many. Women senior managers or directors I could look at and say, you know, she's got it and I want to be like that, you know. So you were maybe picking and choosing your role models from different places. And I think one of the big changes though has just been that move towards a greater recognition and application and actually walking the talk of equality and diversity in the railway as well. So where it might have once been acceptable to, you know, make comments to a woman on the shop floor or in the office, that's, you know, much less acceptable these days. Not saying it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Appreciating I'm coming at it from the angle of someone who doesn't work on the shop floor or in the depot, or here's what goes on in the mess room. So it's important just to say that my experience isn't the experience of other women who are working on the railway as well. But it's a lot better now that a younger woman or a more junior woman entering some of these jobs knows that there are maybe people that she can spot, like Stacey or myself, that you could go to and say, really not happy with what just happened, and know that we'd believe them and take them seriously, where some of the male bosses I've had, I wouldn't have dreamed of, you know, going to speak to them about anything like that. So earlier in your career, putting up with a lot that we don't actually expect younger women to put up with.
Yeah, the stuff I wouldn't put up with now, or
and they won't put up with it as well. Yeah. The younger generation won't put up with it in that way, in the same way we might have said, oh, I can't tell anyone this and I've got to keep it to myself and I'm just going to put my head down and just get on with things. The newer generation, the younger generation are just not like that. So it's really great.
And I think that's male and female as well.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
Because I've had, in more recent years, male colleagues that have actually approached me and said, you know, that's way that someone spoke to you then, were you happy with that? Because I wasn't comfortable with that.
Yes. That's really great to hear.
And you know, so there is that more open dialogue about.
And then another positive that I just want to touch on with both of you, because I hope you won't mind me saying, you've both got families, you've both had time off to have children and then come back, which is a thing I think is really important to see, that people do go off and have families and come back. Yes. Because I think there's an age problem, isn't there, where sometimes we lose people because we get them in at the start of their career, but then, you know, they choose to have a family, which is fine, that's everyone's choice, but it's harder. It used to be harder to come back, I feel like, whereas it seems to be, I don't know if it's getting easier or if it's just that people are sticking with it, but, you know, you've managed to come back after a family and are making it work. I think it's important to see that, don't you?
I think it's still hard. I think it's hard for everyone. I think it's like you've always got that sort of duality in your head. I'm a mum and I want to be at home with my family, but I want a successful career and I want to be a successful professional in my own right. And that's tough for any parent, mum or dad. And I think what's really good about the railway and what can encourage women to start the career in the railway, knowing that a lot of TOCs have really good maternity policies.
Yeah.
A lot of organisations in the railway do make it sort of financially easier for you to go off and have children and come back, knowing that you can come back to your own role and be supported. But yeah, I don't feel like a particular role model in that respect. I don't think any mum at work feels like she's getting it right.
Well, no, absolutely not. I think you feel, you know, you get that.
You're never doing well at anything. Yeah.
Well, as you were bigging up Marie, Chair of Women in Rail, the other day, one of her initiatives this current year is about the returning to the industry thing. So trying to make it better, easier, simpler, understood, and also to make sure that people aren't lost.
Yeah, never mind the gap is the initiative, isn't it, called? Yeah.
I knew there was a phrase for it.
Yeah.
And I hope you don't mind this question as well, and it may have changed, but particularly in your early days as an engineer, Stacey, did you find there was a lot of mansplaining going on? The thing about engineering is you won't understand this, love. And has that got better?
Can I just tell you, Tricia Williams from Northern the other day taught me a new phrase. Always learning, even after, decades on the railway. She now uses the term railsplaining, when a man specifically explains things to you as though you just started on the railway yesterday, and then you're like, I've been around a while, I kind of know this,
So has that happened, and has it got better now?
I must admit, I don't think I've come across it where I've thought someone's really kind of taken the mick here, really, with mansplaining or that kind of thing. I think the only thing I have had sometimes is if I've gone into a meeting with a male colleague, say with a supplier or something like that, someone sometimes assume that I'm like just there to take the minutes.
Oh yeah, we've all had that, haven't we? Like, or to bring the cups of tea in or whatever.
But then that's, because sometimes when you do your introductions and then you say what role you have, you kind of sometimes see a few expressions of like, oh wow, right, okay, that's not the person I thought it was. I've not really had the, where men are trying to explain things in a different way that they might for anybody else. But I suppose maybe that's, I'm one to always ask questions quite a lot anyway, so.
I think it's normally, just because you're so convincing, Stacey. They don't try it on with you because you clearly know what you're talking about all the time.
So, yeah, I've not really had that, to be honest.
That's good. And I mean, Marie at Transport for Wales, now Chief Executive Officer, she was saying when I was talking to about Women in Rail, she said when she first became COO that she would sit in a meeting and somebody would start to explain things a little bit more simply to her. And she said sometimes I'd just take over and complete what they're going to explain me with even more detail and watch their face. The number of people that sort of said, So, but we're getting better, I think, aren't we now, which is good.
So basically, in summary, come and join the railway if you were thinking about it or, you hadn't thought about it, you should. Because, there's so much variety, excitement, and, it's a great place to work. And here are two examples of it. It might not look like what you thought it would look like, but it's provided you with, in your case, it's decades of interest and gainful employee, as we call it on this podcast. Don't
yes,
we? The gainful employee of the railway.
There's room for everyone as well.
Totally.
There is room for everyone, no matter your background, your Gen Z, your sexuality, your anything. There's room for you in the railway.
Yeah. And you're up there with my most impressive random degrees who ended up on the railway, Rachel. That is pretty
physiology.
Good. That.
Yeah, what That's do you great. Do with a degree in physiology? Yeah. You go and manage a fleet of trains.
But sure.
Why not?
There we go.
Why not?
If you've got any questions or things that you'd like us to cover in more detail from today's episode, do drop us a line at contact@pllines.com. Our email box is open for questions and we'd love to hear from you.
And suggestions. And if you'd like us to get these fantastic Women in Rail back, then do get in touch. And I must just say, as the music is coming on at the end here, there's women in front of me again who seem to have packed in more. I keep saying this, it's like what's her name in Gavin and Stacey.
He's going to say we're like Nessa of Gavin and Stacey. Not visually.
I'll take it as a
to me, heading towards my pensionable years, there's these young women around me who seem to have done about 40 years worth of work in the 20 years they've been in the industry or whatever. So, it's a good industry to come into because it doesn't age you. It's a great industry.
And you can pack a lot in.
It's a good job it's not a video. You'd see he was lying.
And on that one, we go.